How does $75 million paid out between now and 2031 sound to you? Like winning a big lottery? Like a reward for a very lucrative job done very, very well? It's actually the buyout awarded to now former Texas A&M head football coach Jimbo Fisher. Fisher's golden dismissal is one of the latest in what's been an exponentially rising tide of head coach salaries, pressure to win lots of games, and buyouts when things don't work out so good. Wisconsin saw some of that firsthand this year when UW-Madison's athletic director Chris McIntosh announced the midseason firing of then-head Badgers football coach Paul Christ. We're going to talk about the money, where it's coming from, and where it's going with Jim Polzin. He covers Wisconsin sports at the Wisconsin State Journal. Jim, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, before we get to what people get paid for not coaching, let's talk about salaries for people who do stay in coaching at, you know, in the high-level programs. USA Today had a list of the highest-paid coaches in college football this last season. Alabama, Nick Saban, $11.4 million. UW's Luke Fickell down at number 13, about 7.6. Are we seeing an upward spiral in the top programs' head coach salaries?
Absolutely, because what happens is one coach will have success and negotiate a new deal, and the competing coach will go to his agent and say, hey, I want to be in that ballpark, if not more. So it's a little bit like player salaries in any of the professional sports. They just keep going up and up, in part because I don't think anybody's willing to say no.
They have that baseball stat, a win against replacement, meaning, hey, how well would somebody else do in this spot? Is there a sense that the head coach makes that much difference for a program in terms of, you know, recruiting to the X's and O's and more?
That's a great question. I mean, certainly if you get the right coach in there that wins a lot of games, the amount of money that rolls into the universities, whether donations, TV money, all that stuff, it goes up the more you win. So there certainly is value. I think we can sit here and have a legitimate argument about how much value mm-hmm. and when what becomes too much in terms of money. But yes, I think, like I said before, once you get competing schools, and especially, you know, if you got a coach coaching somewhere and team B comes in and wants to poach him from that school, that price is going to have to be pretty high.
Now, we could talk a little bit about where the money comes from. Athletic programs are careful to say in most cases, hey, no, your tuition money isn't going into this head coach salary. You mentioned, you know, foundations, donations. Where does this kind of head coach money actually come from?
Yeah, I mean, like part of it is I can only speak really clearly about UW mm-hmm. since, you know, that's the team I cover. And when Paul Christ got fired last year, Chris McIntosh, the AD, was very clear that said, this money is not coming from taxpayers. There's an annual fund through the UW Foundation that I think as of mid 2021 had like $143 million in it. And that's where the $11 million that they ended up negotiating with Paul Christ came from. I mean, that money, that account at the foundation includes scholarship money and funds available for the athletic department to use at its discretion. So that's where that's coming from. I would certainly venture to guess that at a place like Texas A&M, donors have a lot to do with, the decision to fire Jimbo Fisher. So if they're coming at the AD and say, hey, we want this guy out, the AD's question back to them would be, okay, I need some money. And that's, I'm guessing, where that $76+ million came from.
Talking to Jim Polzin, sports columnist for the Wisconsin State Journal, about the high cost of college football coaches and the high cost of firing them with big payoffs, in some cases big buyouts of contracts, including here at Wisconsin. Now, I want to give a listen to the press conference announcing Paul Christ's departure and replacement. Jesse Temple, reporter for The Athletic, asked UW Athletic Director Chris McIntosh about how much Christ was going to get paid to not coach.
It's been reported that Paul's buyout was somewhere between, I don't know, $16 or $19 million. Can you provide any clarity on where that's coming from, or was a decision made that kind of changes that number?
Yeah, Jesse, we'll share more about the specifics of where we ended up with Paul at a future date soon. What I can tell you today is that the number that we agreed to is significantly less than the numbers that have been reported or even the number that would have been due per the terms of his contract.
Now, even so, the number was, you know, in multiples of a million. Jim, how did that end up shaking out?
Yeah, so I think we never really found out what the number he should have been owed was, because there was a complicated formula. Basically, it was somewhere between 19 to 20 million, but that included mitigating clauses that said Paul Chryst had to go search for a job, A, and B, if he found a job, he would have that money would come out of this buyout. And also that he wouldn't get this full 19 to 20 million until the end of his contract. The 5 years had run out. So Paul Chryst and his agent worked out a deal that said, all right, we're not going to, you know, we won't take the full 19 to 20 million. It ended up being 11 million. He does not have to look for a job. And if he does find a job, that money's not coming out of the 11 million. And also this 11 million is going to be paid out within a couple of months. It ended up being, I think, 2 to 3 months. I think by last February, he had all $11 million. So there were obviously advantages for Paul Chryst to you know, make some concessions, even though he was going to get less money in the long run. He was going to get it sooner and really not have any further money held out of that based on the job he found.
Now, here's where the economics might strike people weird, Jim. Okay, you get, or they want to change coaches. Sure. Yep. But why not let a coach run out their contract so that you're not, in effect, paying two guys millions of dollars, one to coach, one not to coach? What is it that makes a program say, yeah, we want to do this now, we're going to blow up the rest of the contract, we're going to keep paying this person to, I guess, watch the game on TV?
Yeah, that's a great question. And also, we should point out that when they went and hired Luke Fickell had a buyout in his contract that Wisconsin ended up paying to Cincinnati, right? I mean, that's the other thing that works in these coaching changes, is that if you're going to go hire a new coach that's employed by another place, you're often buying out that contract. So that's an even another added figure. Again, I'll go back to what I said earlier, is that I think the thinking here is, if you sense your program going in the wrong direction and need to right that ship, it's hard to put a price tag on what that will cost you ultimately. And if you can get back to winning ways, winning brings in more ticket money, ticket revenue. It brings in more donations, like I said before. You know, it brings you a better bowl game in theory. So you're paying up front for what you hope is gaining revenue down the road. And it doesn't always work out. It does not always work out for some programs that make these changes. I would be curious to see what happens at Texas A&M. And if in 5 years they decide, was this $76 million worth it in the long run?
Can you talk about the pressure on a program and on that head coach to win games this year, given that you've got some powers that be at any given major program that is eager to win now and ready to give somebody the boot if they don't?
Yeah, that's always been the thing. I think most coaches kind of know going into it that it's a pressure cooker and that they're, you know, under a microscope. So it's not, none of this should be a surprise necessarily, but there's an intense pressure. And, you know, the more and more money that's thrown around, the more TV money that's generated, you know, now you have players that are gaining money from NIL and stuff. So there's just, it doesn't get any better. I mean, it's getting more and more of a pressure cooker. And that's difficult. And that's, I think, in part why these coaches, are signing these deals that protect themselves. You know, Paul Chryst signed a deal that gave him a buyout that was, you know, upwards of $19 million. Greg Gard has one. He just recently signed one a couple of years ago that basically gives him a $12 million deal in liquidated damages if he gets fired within 3 years. So the coaches and their agents are being smart about it, and the market is leaning that way, that coaches are able to protect themselves a little bit better. So when you sign a five-year deal, you're not just going to get fired and get nothing from it.
Now, as the conferences realign and we have, you know, a more select group of haves in the big super conferences and have nots elsewhere, do you see that maybe increasing the coach salary arms race for those haves in the current setup?
Yeah, I think so. Cause I think that, and what ultimately will end up happening is there's going to be a break off of the power schools from the non-power schools. And I don't know if that means a complete revamp of NCAA or whatever, but there's going to be the haves and the have-nots, certainly from a athletic department finances standpoint. And So then you're probably limiting the number of schools in that group to, you know, 30 to 50 or whatever. And then if you're one of the bottom 10 of that 30 to 50, you can no longer, you know, the pool has gone down and you're comparing yourselves to even more elite programs. So yes, I guess the short answer is yes, it's only going to get worse. I don't know how this corrects itself. I really don't.
In our last minute, I want to ask, is anybody pushing back on that, saying, hey, you know, when we're having eight-figure salaries for somebody who's, you know, bringing the team to, what, a dozen-ish games a year, should we start to try to change things? Is there any argument in the schools that matter?
I don't know that's coming from athletic departments necessarily. I wonder if at some point fans are going to be turned off by this. I already hear from some that are turned off by this. They see all the money in sports, and it sours them on fandom and the experience. So ultimately, fans can make a difference. If they don't buy tickets, if they don't watch anymore, the revenue decreases, and that may force athletic departments' hands. But I don't know that anybody in athletic departments are pushing the stop button anytime soon for fear of getting left behind when everybody else is doing it, right? It's kind of like all these other schools are playing one way. You either keep up with the Joneses or you just aren't one of the Joneses any longer.
Jim, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Jim Polzin, sports columnist at the Wisconsin State Journal. Talked to him today about the high costs of hiring and in some cases firing college football head coaches.